Welcome to the Florida Grown Femme Podcast,
where best friends Janet and Sage cover everything from sex to Starbucks.
Grab a coffee and join.
Hello, 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 and welcome to episode 5 of Florida Grown Femmes. I'm Janet.
I'm Sage.
In today's episode, your mama said, what about the birds and the bees? I don't know about you, Sage, but I am so excited about this topic. We have covered everything from faith to feminism. We said we were going to talk about everything from sex to Starbucks.
We did. We said it, and the people said, let's hear about the sex.
Yeah, like no one wants to hear about Starbucks. They're like, okay,
so nobody cares.
Next time now, let's do this. When we first started talking about this, the first story that popped in my head was, so this is also another 90s kid reference. So,
oh, bless when, the 90s.
Like, remember the movie Clueless, the classic movie? Whenever it like had come out on like VHS, went to Blockbuster and I remember renting that movie. And I had started watching that movie in my bedroom in the privacy of my room. I was super cool because I had, you know, a TV and a VCR player, not cable, dang, but you know, had the VCR. And I started watching and they started talking about like virginity, like, Cher is trying to lose her virginity. And I went out to my dad and I was like, you know, I'm also like elementary school age. This is like, this is like 8 or 9. Like, you know, this is like right when it's come out, you know, so I'm young. And
I'm already cringing.
I go up to my dad and I'm like, Dad, like, what's a virgin? And I remember my dad's face, like him pausing, and he's like, someone who has never been kissed. And I was like, oh, okay. And so went back to watch Clueless. And the whole premise is her losing her virginity. And she started kissing someone fairly quickly in the movie. So I was like, like, that was quick. And like, so I don't know how long that lasted. That didn't stick with me very long. But yeah, I thought a virgin was someone who had never been kissed, was something that my father had
said. Oh my gosh. I am just like, it's like funny, but it happens all the time.
All right, I'm just thinking about all like the birds and the bees talk. Like my dad was the one that gave it to me, and I feel like I purposely blacked out most of it. Just like, nope, don't need to. Nope.
That's fascinating that your dad gave you the birds and the bees talk.
Yeah, I can't, like, thinking about it now, I can't imagine my mom doing it. But also, I'm like, it's not like it was like, Dad, I love you. But I'm like, it was a very uncomfortable conversation. And I found out Catherine never even had the birds and the bees talk. Like,
yeah, he just gave up after you.
It was so scarring for both of me and my dad that it was like, Catherine will figure it out.
Poor Catherine, oh my God. Like, hope she doesn't mind getting shouted out on our podcast. You know, it's so interesting because we titled this podcast, you know, what, basically kind of what your parents said about sex, but the truth is that we hear about sex from so many different, in so many different forms. Like, actually your story started out by hearing something sex related from media.
Yeah.
Media. So had you never been watching Clueless, you may have never gone to your dad and asked him what a virgin was. And the thing is, you know, media can have a huge impact on our lives. We also look to our peers at school and then later our colleagues at work. Yeah. Of course, what our parents say, some of us had sex education in school.
Yeah.
And
in church, then, my sister had that in church. She had a sex ed class.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say, is a lot of people through a church in some way. And your story is just such a reminder to me of why I'm so passionate about talking about sex.
Yeah.
Especially teaching our children about sex.
Well, also you're kind of an expert in it. For those that don't know, like you're like, yeah, I like talking about sex, but like you actually know what you're talking about when you're talking about sex.
Right. I mean, I've spent, for those just who don't know me, Sage, I spent a lot of years working with women in the sex industry, which gave me a very interesting view of sexuality. And I also have a master's in marriage and family pastoral counseling. And that's where my sort of desire to discuss sex comes from. Not only to have like accurate sex information, but to talk about it as families and in all of these different realms. Yeah. So definitely passionate about it. Definitely love this topic. And for a lot of you who follow me, you know that I'm on Instagram at Let's Talk with Sage. Just sharing all kinds of stuff. But Janet, so I mentioned some areas like the media, school, family. Which area do you feel like influenced you the most looking back?
Looking back, I think I would say,
because it doesn't sound like that conversation with your dad was a huge influence.
I mean, I don't think I got a lot of influence from the church or my family necessarily when I look at like the big impacts. I think the big impacts were media, like 100%. And I don't know if it was a mix of media, but also the feeling like I needed to keep up with my peers, whether that was actually my peers doing that or the media making me feel like I needed to keep up. I'm not sure, but yeah, I think it was the media. I felt like for most of my life, like I've always been super drawn to TV, like specifically TV shows, like, and I was always really drawn to, just kind of like the romantic storylines and stuff. And so a lot of like TV shows and stuff, I think looking back, there are all these love storylines, like it's that started in high school I think about like Degrassi or High School Musical any Disney Channel movie, like, you know, the big, like love starts in high school, you know, that's when you get love. And, you know, I was definitely a late bloomer in life. Mm-hmm. And like, I really couldn't get, like looking back, like I can honestly say maybe it wasn't my confidence level or whatever it was, but I really couldn't get men to look at me until like college. It was really like, I was desperately trying to get attention from any guy. And I really, you know, figured out how to get that in college. But, you know, in high school, I think a big part of everything I wanted and stuff and why I was so obsessed with one particular guy was one, because he's the only one that was showing me interest. And I was like, if he's the only one that's showing me interest, like he's the only one I can do some of these like sexual activities with that peers, everybody seems to be doing, like, I want to do that. I want to keep up with that. I don't want to be left a loser behind. And not, or like like feel rejected or unwanted. Like I want to be like everybody else. And I felt like that kind of came more from not my peers. I think the media made me feel like I needed to keep up. Like what I was seeing more normal than versus what was around me.
And it's really interesting that you bring up media because, you know, when we were quote unquote coming of age, we didn't quite yet have smartphones.
Right.
Remember you had a pink razor.
Yeah. Like that was high school. Yeah, like for sure. The razor came out the end of our senior year of high school.
We started with MySpace, I think, in high school, but high it was not. Yeah. It was not what it is today.
College at first to be in Facebook. If that's really showing our age. Like
I know. But my point with that is, you know, the type of media that was influencing you and me wasn't even what, for example, Gen Z has had.
Right. Social media was just.
We had Cosmo.
Yeah.
Cosmo. Our teen, Teen Vogue.
So bad. Yeah.
We had those VHS movies, you know, and it was just starting to become like increasingly more sexual.
Yeah. And I think I was more hindered, like unlike other people, like I wasn't allowed to watch MTV growing up. It wasn't until like high school. So like the media influences I had were the quote unquote safe stuff. I wasn't like, you know, the clueless thing, I'm sure my dad now looking back was like, why did I let my 9-year-old daughter watch this? But like,
he was, you know, clueless.
I'm sure he thought it was safe, like at the time and things. And like, but like, you know, I wasn't overly monitored and stuff, but I also like, you know, I can only imagine if I was like, once I started to watch MTV as well, like in high school and like, music videos and stuff are, you know, you're talking about like the culture that we kind of came of age, like for anyone that saw the Britney documentary on Hulu, like that's what we grew up in, that right. culture of women like needed to look a certain way. We had low rise jeans. Like it was so impossible to look good. You know, you always had to work out. It was a whole thing. Like,
and speaking of the Britney and, you know, her quote unquote, you know, losing her virginity to Justin Timberlake was like a scandal, you know?
Yeah. And that was
talk about sex and media.
Like that was something we asked women in the early 90s, like 90s, early thousands, like, have you lost your virginity yet? Like, the hell? Like that was a question that like, I don't know. Yeah. I used to, you know, I always wanted to be famous. Like that was something that I always thought, like one day I was like, I'm gonna be famous. Like when I did like, you know, you do your shower speeches and things like that, I would think about questions I would get on like the red carpet. And I was like, that's gonna be an embarrassing question one day. Like that happened. Like,
yeah.
That was a question that's asked. Like today we would never, ever ask somebody that, ask a woman that. Like, but that was something that people were just asking. And also I remember like in college too, like I would get asked that all the time, like freshman, sophomore year, like,
right.
Like, are you virgin and things like that. And there was this one preconceived notion. It was either, and I never knew if it was good or bad. Like some guys reacted like it was a great thing. And other guys reacted like, oh, that's a shame. And it was like, I don't know what is, what am I supposed
what
to do?
What do you want from me?
Yeah. Right. What do you want from me? Like, cause that's the other thing too. Is like, I felt like I needed to be sexy, but I also needed to be a good girl, but I didn't want to be slutty, but I wanted to seem like I had skill. Like, so it was like this, it was difficult to maintain. Like,
yeah. No, totally.
Trying to figure it out. A lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure.
What about you? Like, where do you feel like your influences came from?
Well, just so to bring it back to the parents.
Yeah,
I do not recall ever having a conversation with my parents, and my mom listens to this podcast, so she'll tell me if I'm wrong. But I don't remember that. And my family, we joked, like on my dad's side of the family, we joked about sex a lot of which, of course, when I was in middle and high school, just went over my head.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say that was the main influence. For me, the largest influence was by far the church. Mm. So growing up, I went to a lot of different types of churches.
Yeah.
But they all kind of had the same sex message, which was just don't do it or don't think about it until you're married.
Mm.
And up until puberty, that was kind of like, okay.
Easy. Okay.
Like, whatever. I don't know what that is anyway. So no problem. But then of course you hit puberty, and I just remember not necessarily like wanting to have sex with every person I saw, but yeah. I like you wanted an intimate relationship.
Yeah.
You know, just wanted to feel close to someone, just wanted to feel connected to someone in some way. And the teachings in some churches were so extreme that it was even, you know, sort of frowned upon to be in a relationship.
Yeah.
And let me explain a little bit about that. So I remember late high school, a book came out by Joshua Harris called I Kiss Dating Goodbye. And he basically talks in the book about how dating is a waste of time. You just need to find someone, court them, marry them.
Mm.
He has since come out and apologized profusely. He wrote a second book saying he was totally wrong. And wow. He basically led an entire generation of Christians astray. Sorry, Josh, I'm still throwing you under the bus here. But it was this idea, this such an intense view towards, you know, quote unquote, sexual immorality, or even just desire, like just desiring to be with another person was so shut off.
Almost sounds like
that.
Sounds,
yeah. And so I was in it. I had purity rings. I read the books, including his terrible book.
Did you sign did you do a purity pledge? Cause you mentioned something like, yeah, you know, I never did that, but I know that's things that some churches do where they have like girls sign purity pledges, but I'm like, yeah, they're doing it for 8 or 9 before puberty kicks in.
I know, right? Before they even know what they're signing up for.
Yeah.
Boys suck.
Ew. Like, easy.
Yeah, right. No, I can't remember, but if it did happen, it wouldn't have been at church. It would have been at like a conference or like a camp.
Yeah.
You know, that's where they hit the kids and the teens with all the sex talks. And I mean, I'm putting sex talks in air quotes because it has nothing to do with sex except don't do it. Don't touch it. Don't think about it.
What you're talking about. It's like you grew up, we grew up in the same town, the same place, same time.
We did.
But I grew up in the hookup culture world and you grew up in this purity world.
Yes.
And it's kind of wild to like think about that when you think like we're living the same place, living the same town, but massively different influences in our life, but we're kind of getting to, I guess maybe we feel similarly now, but you know, looking back at what the church has influenced, like how do you feel like it's been a negative experience, like what the church has taught you?
Well, here's the thing. Yes. Okay. Yes. And I'm sorry to all the Christians out there who are still like, you know, gung-ho for purity culture, but so it didn't stop like in childhood or adolescence, you know, it continues until you're married. So if you don't get married until you're 50 years old, that's still the framework. And so I went to a discipleship program, 6 month long program. And I met my husband there, my now husband. And in that program, it was all adults. So everyone had to be above the age of 18 and you were not allowed to date anybody during
that time. I forgot about that. You weren't allowed. Right.
And looking back, it's kind of like, how are you going to tell adults like not to date, you know?
Yeah.
And so my husband, Timon, and I, we met there, just clicked instantly. And we were not quote unquote dating. We had not made any kind of commitment to like be together or anything. And we were constantly getting in trouble just for spending time together.
Yeah.
And that getting in trouble really confused me because
if you think about it, like you were getting in trouble for having quality time with your now husband. I mean, even then, like you guys were friends forever first before the, you know, before commitment side of things. And so even at that point in life, that had to be confusing. The like, oh, quality time with a boy is bad.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, like very strict.
Yeah.
Like very strict. Like one night, Timon and I had gone for a walk and didn't even touch each other. We just were walking and talking. And somebody found out that I wasn't like in my bed. And so some of the people leading this program were waiting outside for us to come back. And I almost got sent home I almost was not able to complete the program because of Timon and I's friendship.
Like for anybody that's watched Bridgerton, it's like that. Like that was Sage's life for 6 months. Like,
and it's just,
he was like, how dare you be outside with another man at night? What could have happened? Like,
like, please. And the thing is that where all of that comes from is sort of this concept that you cannot even consider, like you can't even have like a sexual desire or a wish towards another person until you're like already married to them, which is just not real. Like that doesn't happen. That's not how it works, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, of course there's a lot of shame. There is a lot of shame in the Christian circle because of that, because you cannot just turn off your sexuality. I'm sorry. You can't.
Yeah.
You can hone it in, you can rein it down or whatever, but you cannot just turn it off. It's not a light switch that just magically with marriage pops right on, you know? And so for me, that followed us into our friendship. Not as much once we were not married, because we were kind of like, well, screw that. Like we married, like, bye-bye. We finally did what you wanted. We got married, you know, you ain't got nothing to say. You know, and I do just want to share this, you know, Janet and I, we talked about the podcast and when we talked about sex, how Christians would view that. And I told Janet, I said, nobody will judge me because I'm married.
Yeah.
And Janet, you have to be concerned about that. And that's the reality of the very conservative evangelical bubble. Is if you're unmarried, nobody cares, nobody asks. But if you're not, it's everybody's business. And that's really unhealthy. It's really unhealthy.
Oh, 100%. Like, you're kind of talking again, like, it, yeah, you're nailing it, that with our audience and stuff, there's a potential that I'm looked at differently if I talk about sex or even, you know, admit to having sex at this point in some conservative churches and stuff. There's also, you know, you talk about like the church has made a major impact and stuff. And I, you know, kind of pushed out the thought of that the church ever really impacted me in that way. But the truth is, like, that's not true. When I went to Southeastern,
which is a Christian college in Florida.
Yeah. An AG Christian college in Florida. It's pretty popular now. But
for non-Florida people.
Yeah. And like, you know, for any family members, I'm sorry if I'm going to burst your bubble right now. It's not that I don't love Jesus, but at that time, like, at Southeastern, I'm in the biggest, outside of the theology major, I'm in the biggest major. I'm in the communications department. I'm in the biggest one. And it's a close-knit community for like 150, you know, 200 majors and stuff. And there was only me and I'm sure he won't care if I say, but me and one other guy who, one, I had transferred in, so I've almost got like this pass, that weren't virgins in the department, or at least openly admitted that they weren't virgins, and or specifically that, you know, we weren't trying to be born again, like born again virgins, like I felt like there's that pressure to put on, like I was supposed to feel bad about what I had done when I didn't. And I was just like, I can, you know, learn from my past or whatever, but like, I was like, I don't feel bad about what I did. Like,
can you please explain to our audience what a born again virgin is, for crying out loud?
Oh, I don't. Yeah. This is one of those where it's like, oh, we're going to offend some people today. So there is this belief, and it's rooted in good intentions, where the idea is, you know, the idea is like, oh, I had sex before I was quote unquote, if you had sex before you were quote unquote a Christian, and then you get saved, everything that had been done in your past is washed away and you were made new by the blood of Christ. That is the idea. And now you are a virgin again. So now that you've been made clean, you were made new. And so everything is made new in your life. There's some problems with that. Like, there's a lot of there's a lot of guilt and shame that comes from that, especially for women. And I think for anyone that's a victim of sexual violence or abuse and stuff, it's really triggering and damaging to say those type of things. Like, because it's, I think, part of like my story kind of deal. But I was, you know, when I was at that school after that, like I was like, okay, I'm celibate now. Yeah. Like, any relationship I have, like, we're not going to have sex and stuff. And like, you know, that wasn't difficult for me to say, because again, no one was dating me at this time, but like, you know, for a year and a half, 2 years, whatever, I said I was celibate. And, you know, that was a really difficult time in my life. Like, being at Southeastern, like being comfortable in, like, one, as a confident woman, one, confident in my sexuality, was, there was no one else. Like, you know, I was alone in that. Like, there was no other female at that school that I knew that was owning who they were, and in this sense, at least, like, their sexuality in this sense. Like, they were, like I said, I'm the only one that I knew of in my school that wasn't a virgin and was talking about it.
Well, and the thing is that, again, it's the talking about it part.
Yeah.
Because we know that 1 in 4 women are victims of sexual assault,
right?
Which means there were women there who had been assaulted. Then there had to have been other women at the school who had previously had sex. Yeah. But it's the not talking about it. And the problem with not talking about it is shame, which is what you were strongly dealing with. And I imagine all of them were dealing with. And yeah. the thing about it is, though, that this gets me about the virginity topic is, like, sure, if you want to say that virginity is like your first sexual intercourse experience, whatever. But the thing is nobody enters into any kind of relationship with zero sexual experience. Like, you were born a sexual being. You're collecting your sexual experiences along the way. And just pretending like you haven't been is really setting us up for disaster in the future. Or
pretending you're not until you're married. I think exactly, it's really right. confusing with, because on the flip side, you know, there are still couples that are, you know, maybe they're not crossing that intercourse line, but they're intimate and stuff. And I think back at now, where at the time I was told rape didn't happen on campus, which I have since learned that's not true. But I, you know, that time we were teaching men that, like, one, the pressure was on us as women to say no. It was all put on us. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of it was, you know, we weren't talking about how to have, like, you know, talk about our preferences. If somebody was doing, like, what I just think about now about the women who were probably put in a position where they were uncomfortable with what was happening and they didn't know how to vocalize it because it's been so shameful to talk about, you know, like, mm-hmm. I said, I was the only one that was talking about it, but there were people that were coming up and talking to me about it after that. Of course. Like, they would come up to my Buttercup house and be like, I got some questions, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, like, and that's the thing, mm-hmm. like, is this normal? This is stuff, like, you know, and I was still a newbie at that point. I didn't know anything. I just mm-hmm. like, what, I admitted I had done something. And so,
yeah,
you know, it's just damaging to put this pressure. And I'm, you know, we haven't talked about, and I don't think it's necessarily for this episode for us to go super mm-hmm. in depth with it, but mm-hmm. you know, I know people are going to come at us with, like, well, what does the Bible say, you know, you mm-hmm. like, about sex before marriage, and like, that's not this episode, and like,
no,
that's not this episode. But there was, you know, repercussions for this purity culture, this hookup culture in both the Sage and I's lives. Yes. And it played out in very different ways. Like, most mm-hmm. of my life was part of the hookup culture, but that couple years of Southeastern purity culture really wrecked me for
the like next 180 few, for you.
Yeah, it really screwed my next, like, few relationships after that, like any intimate relationships I had mm-hmm. or dating relationships after that, because I had to kind of flip the mindset of what is normal, mm-hmm. like what was normal in that college bubble and what's normal in the everyday world was not what it was like a culture shock again. It was a culture shock when I went to the university. It was a culture shock when I went out because it was these different worlds.
And really different worlds.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, again, it's that it's the lack, it, you know, cause we're not going to get into what the Bible says, but for me, the shame, it doesn't matter what the Bible says. It's the secrecy around it, the lack of communication around it. Yeah. That brings a lot of shame. And I see from both of us answering this question that we've both dealt with that in different, even though we've had so different experiences.
Yeah.
That's definitely a common feeling or experience we've shared is the shame part of it.
So wild. Well, the other thing too is like we had, bring up my sister again. Sorry, Catherine, but like on the flip side, like her church experience in sex ed is also very different from mine. Her class and like the couple, you know, years around her and stuff, we had at that time an associate pastor who her previous career, she was a OBGYN nurse. Like, so she delivered babies and stuff for a good 20 years of her life before she became a pastor. Yeah. And she did a sex ed class for the youth group at that time. And it wasn't just one time. It was multiple lessons. And like, I think about how that class like got, like, it was details. Like they learned all about birth control, all about different birth control methods, how to use a condom. Like they learned like in-depth things where I'm like,
yeah,
how the hell do you know more about this than I do? Like that kind of stuff where I'm like, the church, there is a way to do it. Like, and the church found a way to make it, you know, they weren't saying go have sex. They were saying like, these are things you're going to need to know as an adult human.
Whenever, like, you make the choice.
Yeah. Whenever you get married, you need to know these things too. Here's how STDs get transmitted.
Of course. Here's
how condoms work. Like all these little basic things where I'm like, I even to this day, I have Christian friends
who they only married, you know, they were virgins when they got married, or they were only with a couple different people, like one other person before, they come to me with questions about like, is this like, could this be an STD? Like they come with me with questions about like, what's normal in sex? Like, because like somehow I'm like, I don't think I openly talk about sex all the time, but I'm definitely not afraid to talk about it.
Right.
And
right.
So it's, you know, we're talking about it comfortably, like, but I think a lot of people like that grew up that like you did, Sage, like didn't come out of it going into counseling and getting a background in it. They're still might be struggling with a lot of this shame.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. A lot of people. And you know, the thing that gets me is people tell me all the time, oh, Sage, I'm so glad you're talking about this. The church doesn't talk about it enough. And I'm like, wait a second. The church talks about it a lot. And in my opinion, they've got all the wrong people talking about it. Save for this, what you're telling me, what Catherine experienced. I love that. Having someone who actually has a background in that talking about sex. Because your pastors, no offense to anybody listening to this, but your pastors studied theology, not sexology. They did not, they did not study sex therapy.
Yeah.
And so they have a very limited, you know, offering of what they could even share about sex.
Yeah.
And so if you're listening to this, you're a youth pastor, you're a pastor, you're in the church, like, please, please ask someone in your community who knows more about sex education than you.
Yeah.
To talk about it. Because there is so much misinformation. There's so much shame. People are going to Janet asking for, you know, asking about STDs. I mean, like, come on, guys. Not that Janet isn't a
should I get the Gardasil vaccine? Yes. Like,
get it. Get the Gardasil vaccine.
Go you know, to Rhino every year. Yes. Like,
wow, this is real 101 stuff here. Yeah. So my thing is like, sure, talk about sex in the church, but get somebody who's studied more than just theology to talk about it.
And don't be afraid. I think that's the main thing is that like, there's this fear around talking about sex because, you know, that you're afraid that you're going to lead people astray. When I think we just need to really have, be real, be accountable for what's happening. It's happening no matter what, whether you talk about it or not, whether, so either have the influence or not. And do it in the right way. You know, we talked, you know, you nailed it. It needs to be done. Like, it can't just be done by the pastors anymore or the youth pastors. Like there's, yes, there is pastoral guidance that comes into the relationship that definitely should be spoken into. But if there's a pastor that's afraid of bringing up, you know, a nurse that knows what they're talking about or a sex expert, you know, I think you might want to question a little bit about their leadership and accountability. My lights just went off. That's fine. Power just went out. Are you still there? All right, we're back. Sorry, guys, with that brief pause. There's a little delay here. That is because there was yesterday when Sage and I were recording this episode, there was a fire in my building and I had to get evacuated. So if you saw on social media, if you follow us on social media, you saw that adventure happening. But we are back. I was saying my wrap up thought, Sage, was that in the church, pastors and stuff, we shouldn't be afraid of having experts come in or having different opinions in the church. And we should question authority when they're questioning experts and stuff, because nothing should, you know, stop us from getting the right counsel.
I love that statement, question authority when they're questioning experts. I really love that idea. And what I've personally gained from this episode is that you and I have both been very influenced by the different Christian spheres we've been a part of. And clearly that has had a larger impact than maybe we thought going into this episode. Always so much to learn about ourselves as well. And what I just want to encourage our audience to do is, you know, if you've never sat down and thought about like, hey, wait a second, like, what did my parents tell me growing up? Or what did I see in the media? Or, you know, what were my friends at school saying or the church, et cetera? I really encourage you to, even if you're like the kind of person who likes to journal or take pen to paper, write that stuff down and just see what comes out of it. I think there's just so much self-discovery there. And I really encourage you to take the time to look it over, think it over. And if you're feeling brave, then definitely in the comments, let us know what you think. Let us know where you have felt influenced, how that's affected you. We're obviously interested in your lives like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. We love to hear from you guys. We love reading your questions and stuff and your comments and stuff on our social media profiles. So please visit us and follow us at Florida Grown Femmes Podcast on Facebook or Instagram. You can also subscribe now on Spotify and Google and Apple Podcasts. And so on that note, I am so excited for next week's topic. Is she allowed to say that?
Is she?
Can she say that? So tune in next week, guys. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye.
Stay safe.